This is Connected Nation, a podcast focused on all things broadband, from closing the digital divide to improving your internet speeds. We talk technology topics that impact all of us, our families, and our communities. I'm Jessica Denson, and on today's edition of Connected Nation, we're talking with Jim Stewart, who is the Chief Technology Officer for the Utah Education Network, and Rich Finlinson, who is the Associate Director of Communication for the Utah Education and Telehealth Network. Jim has more than 40 years of experience working in the technology profession. For the last 20 years, he's worked directly with educational technology supporting all higher education and public schools in the state of Utah. He holds a degree in economics as well as the CETL and ITIL certifications. Rich, meanwhile, holds a master's degree in instructional design and educational technology and is a former journalist with KSL in Salt Lake City and the Associated Press in Washington, D.C. He is also an author and accredited in public relations. So let's get to why we are here today. UEN has really been ahead of the curve in tracking technology. You've been working for years to understand what's in your schools. Explain to me why that has been important.
I will be happy to jump in there. I have a couple of quotes hanging on my wall here that I think are applicable to this. And one of them is from Peter Drucker, the management expert, that said, "What gets measured gets managed." And I think that, you know, we are funding our digital teaching and learning program through the Utah State Legislature. And if we just had a big blank check, maybe it wouldn't be as critical to have these yearly inventories of school technology going on. But we do not have a blank check from the legislature. We have to go to them every year and say, here's what we're doing. Here's where we're seeing the improvements. And so that Peter Drucker quote about what gets measured gets managed, I think you could also say what gets measured positively gets funded. And so it's been really helpful for us to have those hard, cold statistical reports to say, here's what's going on with technology in Utah, and your investment, state legislators, is making a difference.
And Jim, as Chief Technology Officer, can you explain kind of what your role is in some of that?
My role at UEN is to really look forward and see where technology is going and see where we need to be. And part of what we're doing with this is we had this digital teaching and learning initiative, and we had legislators and other state leaders that were looking at how much money should we put into this. And they came to us and asked us to do an inventory. And since we started doing the inventory, I've been the sponsor of that inventory project. And the first time when we got this, I think, Rich, you can help me piece this together, but we had about 14 weeks from the time we started to look at the RFP and we looked through who could help us with that. We hit on Connected Nation, and then we said go. And from that moment on, and I don't remember if that was 14 weeks till we were having to give the inventory report or not, but we had to do this in a very short amount of time, and we had to make a lot of quick decisions. And I've led that team and been involved. We've had two different project managers over the course of time, but making sure that we have a really good idea and scope of what we're trying to get done, and then lining everything up and getting it done, because we've got all these different LEAs around the state, and trying to get this information from them in that short amount of time was very difficult, but we got 100% of them to respond to our survey.
I would jump in on this and just say that, the first time you do something is not easy. And this is one of the reasons we're all under increased stress right now, is because in our lifetimes, we've never done a global pandemic before. So everybody, virtually everybody on the planet, is dealing with something for the first time. Well, in a much smaller magnitude, when we did our first statewide inventory, it was definitely a first time for us. And something that helped us was that at least the vendor we went to, you guys, Connected Nation, had experience and was able to get on the ground and get this done and get this done to the point of 100%. But the first time was uncomfortable, I think, for both of us. And then the second time, a little more smoothly, a little more planning went into it. And then third time, even better. And so this just goes to show that practice makes perfect, and the first time is tough. So if you have to go do something for the first time, at least if you can involve a partner, a collaborator who has had some experience in trying to do what you're attempting, that will make all the difference.
Rich is just right on about that. We didn't know what we were going to create. We didn't know what to expect. We just knew we had to do something. We had a very short time frame to get it done. In retrospect, we look back on that. We've used that as a blueprint for the next two iterations. We now have three bars on our bar chart to show what we've done. But that first one was very difficult to do.
So guys, Utah is a small state out west. Why would things that are happening in a small western state really apply to much, much larger population areas like New York or California?
Jessica, I'm really glad you asked that question, because Utah might appear to be small, but if you look at the total number of students served, we're serving about 658,000 students across the state of Utah. If that were one district, that would put us right below New York City, which is serving 1.1 million, but ahead of Los Angeles, which is serving about 653,000. So that's a lot of students, and what we do here matters.
Well, there's another aspect to this, too, to think about, and that is we may not be one of the big states. We're small in a lot of ways, but we have a long history of having higher ed and public ed collaborate together and work together, and you don't find that everywhere. And I know that not every project that we have in Utah do we collaborate, but we've brought those elements together. We've got the libraries in there. We're pretty nimble. We move fairly quickly and we get things done. And there's been a lot of things that just, you know, it's not by accident that we get some things that are done that are interesting in other places that lead the way. And there's a lot of good people that are willing to work together just and get things done. And that makes a big difference here. It's one of the reasons I really enjoy working at UEN and in the state of Utah.
And just to give listeners an idea of just how big that undertaking is, there are more than 1,000 public schools, charter and district, in Utah. And so that's a huge undertaking. Since then, tracking this, we've seen an increase in Google Chromebooks. You've seen an increase in one-to-one mobile devices. How do you think that knowing where the technology is and understanding where the technology is in your schools is really having an impact on what's going on now? Are you able to make better decisions based on what needs to happen, or have you empowered the schools to be able to make those decisions? Because as you mentioned, this is the first time that anyone is going through something like we are now with COVID-19.
Well, you know, I've talked about the impact of this for the state lawmakers that fund us, but I think generally speaking, it's also been really helpful for the districts and the charter schools to know exactly what resources they have on hand, particularly now with the COVID-19 pandemic, because if they need to check out technology to their students and their faculty, they need to know what's available and what's possible, as well as what isn't there and what is not within the realm of possibility right now. And so I think this process has been good for the people that we've surveyed, as well as for our larger product, particularly because of all these unknowns with the pandemic. How helpful is it to know that, hey, as of when we filled out the Connected Nation survey, we knew that we had 2,500 Chromebooks on hand, for example?
Well, if I could jump in on this too, you have to have a baseline. And I just can't stress enough what that means and how important that is. And so in 2015, we didn't really have any of this information, but we went out and we collected that and we got that baseline. This was very interesting. And we tried to decide, do we do this every year? We decided to do it every other year. So in 2017, we went out there and we did this again. And we didn't know what we were going to find, but we found this growth. We found some other things that you know, there were areas where we didn't see growth. There were some discussions with the districts about is really measuring certain things like how many wireless access points per classroom. Is that really helpful? And then this next time around, we see that curve and we really start to see these trends unfold. So now we're seeing this historical story unfolding for us. And we can start to, and I'm not really trying to be the one that interprets this for anybody. We're trying to get that information so you can go look at that and draw your own conclusions, find your own story in this. But that information is out there, and we're collecting it in very similar ways every year. So we're consistent about that. We're very consistent about the questions. So if we're going to change them, we really test ourselves and ask, do we need to change that question? If we do, how would we change it? So we try and keep this longitudinal data growing and meaningful. And I think that's, you know, I like sitting back and seeing this story unfold.
It really goes back to what Rich said in the beginning with the quote, I believe that was you, Rich, that said, we have to really think about data and not just for understanding it, but for the funding and for everything that's moving forward. Obviously, no one can predict how the world is going to change after this pandemic. But what are some things that you all are seeing or that you guys think that you'll see in the schools moving forward? Do you think anything will be addressed differently? Would you like to, have there already been some lessons learned at this point?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the world is going to change for us. But Rich, do you want to jump in? I mean, I've got a lot of thoughts on this, but if you want to tackle it first and then I can follow up.
I would say from my point of view as a communications professional, something that has come through so strongly on this is the need for ongoing interactive communication with your team. My three-person staff, the other two people who work for me, have done more of the working from home than I have. So I've kind of been the laggard in pulling all this together. But it has really underscored the idea that communication is important. And I think that's something that, you know, comes back to the work that you folks have done with us, that we always, right from the get-go, we were in perfect sync on the idea that we needed to communicate the why of this project and the specifics, the expectations, the deadlines. I know we had webinars, we went out with multiple communications, and you know, when you're asking someone to do something for you, it's so much easier if you can communicate the why and the expectations and the specifics, then you get their cooperation. And I think that has to be one of the takeaways from this whole project is communicate, interact, get people as close as you can to being on the same page and understanding why it's important.
Thanks, Rich. I think one of the most interesting things I heard somebody say, and I can't remember who, but it was just this conversation I was in where we were talking and we said, you know, if someone had said how many years or what would the plan be for us to go to fully online courses, that, you know, we would come back with a 2 or 3 year or 4 year plan. It would just take time. And yet we've shown what we could do. And in a lot of ways, our resiliency and the robustness and power of the technology, because we didn't have 2 or 3 years. We just said, you know, now we've got to go online. And one of the things that we've been hearing is thank yous from some of the teaching community, because they can see that the technology can back them up and help them on that. And there's certainly struggles and there's things we've got to do better, but we do have a good foundation of technology in place. And we can see that. We can go back and show what that is based on the inventory, but we also know that from people's experience that we've been fairly successful so far moving forward. But we also, I mean, there's so many other lessons in this, and it's difficult to really pin down what's the most important, but we certainly have learned some things. I'm frustrated in many ways because we have all this technology, all this great capacity, and it's got some backup to it, and it's very robust and reliable and very secure at the schools, and it's filtered at the schools, and yet those schools, we never thought about them being closed. And what do you do when that happens? And so we've got this resource that's idled quite a bit, and we're scrambling trying to figure out how do we unleash that, and where do we go to get some ideas, to put things in place, to try things. Some things work, some things don't. And move this forward. But I think just the willingness to work together and help each other. And so there's a real human component to this, even though we're have this distancing and we're separated, we're still coming together. I see that with my staff, where there's a lot of these discussions and looking for how can we move forward. That's part of the lessons learned. And there's lots of other things going on right now.
Yeah, that's really poignant what you say. Now, got to go online now, because that's kind of what's happening all over in all sectors of our lives right now, that we're all feeling that. We got to go online now to access the things we need. I had the pleasure last year of interviewing some teachers and students in Utah school districts while we were doing the inventory. And there was a lot of excitement I heard from the kids and the teachers about the technology and the ways that they could move forward and excel in their grades through using this technology. And there was a lot of talk about new projects and new programs that were coming out. Has there even been any time yet to think about after?
Well, maybe too much time to think, because you can only do so much, and you can have meetings and you can make assignments, and especially from a director level, so much of the work has to be done by others. And so it's given me a lot of time to think. And I wonder, I see us trying to how do we get MiFis? How do we use maybe technology that's drive buses out that have Wi-Fi capability into neighborhoods? We've been working with the providers, and they've been really marvelous to work with, especially our rural telcos and our major telco in Salt Lake City. They've all stepped up, and they're all getting these students and these families hooked up to the internet. But, you know, while that's going on, I'm thinking about it, saying, you know, what would make this different? What would make this better? And one of the things, and it's been a pet project of mine for about 3 years, but I'm trying to figure out this whole LTE 5G play. And really, you know, that we see what the carriers are doing, and I don't want to compete with the carriers or have anything, you know, get into their space. I'm looking forward to having my own 5G instance of that and on my phone and my devices. But I look at that technology and what if we had that available to us at the schools, and what if we could turn that out into the neighborhoods, and what if all of this bandwidth that we had available to us right now could be instantaneously focused and turned out so that anyone that needed to use it could use that. And I just see that as a very low cost, very sustainable way of being able to extend our networks. And I hope that we'll keep looking at that and trying to figure out how to do that. I don't think the devices are the issue, at least not for me, because it's about how do you get that connectivity, that network, and in a robust way so that everybody can log on. And another thing that we're doing is we're doing EduRoam, and I don't know if you're familiar with EduRoam, but it's this capability to wherever you go, where there's an EduRoam equipped site that has that as Wi-Fi access. If I have EduRoam, I automatically log in and I have access to the network. And I think it's totally an access issue. So when you go out into the world, if you have to do guest Wi-Fi login and hope or try and search for a McDonald's or do something like that, that just makes it more difficult. But if wherever you go, you had this automatic access to Wi-Fi, how much better our lives would be, and would our connectivity and our ability to maneuver within this world that we've created.
During the break, when we're having our own technical problems with the podcast today, Jim brought up that neighborhoods need to rethink their networks. So you're really saying that schools and neighborhoods and all of us should really be thinking about how we expand access to more people and improve the platforms?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that the network is there. It's available most places. And where it's not, we've been extending that. We've been doing these projects to bring, we started with the low-hanging fruit. We had 105 sites that had fiber connectivity back in the early 2000s, and we just didn't have to put any funding into those, and we got them hooked up with gig. And then we went up higher in the tree, and we had to go get funding. And now we just got these 6 or 7 sites left that don't have fiber, but each one of the builds is $1 million to the site or something. But we have the funding. The governments and different funding sources have come together to help us. And so we're going to get fiber into those areas, and that will change their lives and make it so much better. And what we're doing is making sure that we're doing that with carriers so that it's not just the schools that will benefit, but it will be the communities, the businesses, the residents. But from there, we've just got to figure out this whole Wi-Fi component and the wireless component. And I don't think Wi-Fi is going to be robust enough for us in the future. Then we're going to have to figure something else out. And that's why the LTE. And then that's why, if you're going to log on, what's sort of this universal log on? That's why EduRoam is important to me, that we get this. I'm of the opinion that everybody ought to have that EduRoam account. Everybody ought to have, this Wi-Fi capability, this LTE capability, and we ought to be just broadcasting that out, and people can get onto that. And the more we can push that out, and we all have access to that, the better off we're going to be.
I can definitely agree with that. Our nonprofit believes that everyone belongs in a connected nation. And what we mean by that is everybody should have access, because there are resources that are needed. And COVID-19, this whole thing with the pandemic, has definitely shown a spotlight on that. So in closing, I'd like to ask you both what you think are some lessons or takeaways other districts or other states can even take from what you guys have learned. Any thoughts that you would share with other leaders across the country?
I'm happy to jump in. We talked earlier about communication. I think that is absolutely essential as you go about undertaking any large project. I'd also come up with a couple of words that kind of rhyme with communication. One of them is navigation. And I think, if you're going to set out on a road trip in a car, these days you have a phone that is your navigator. But before phones, I remember how much more effective it was when I was on vacation with my wife and my family to have the non-driver adult be the navigator, so that the driver can focus on getting the upcoming right turn followed by the left turn. But the navigator sees the big picture. And I think this is one of the reasons that you want to engage in the kind of research that we've done over many years now with Connected Nation, because it kind of separates those roles. And you have someone looking ahead in that navigator position. Meanwhile, you're trying to drive the project forward. And it, to separate those functions and have a specialist really helps. So navigation is one that rhymes with communication, kind of. And the other one that Jim has already touched on is collaboration. We're seeing the telecoms that we've collaborated with, you know, that have been vendors to us for years, now starting to do the right thing and realize we need to reach out and bridge this digital divide during this crisis, during this pandemic. And it's been, fun and interesting to see how they've stepped up. But we've had some accountability with them in terms of we are keeping a list, a public list of what all the various telecoms that we've done business with across the state are doing to connect homes. And it might be interesting to get Jim to reflect on the power of these relationships when you get into a situation. But the relationships have really proven valuable at this time. So I guess the three words I'd say: communication, navigation, collaboration.
That's fantastic. Jim, you have some closing thoughts?
Well, I'm an economist by education and by interest. And, this is the allocation of resources. That's the fundamentally what economics is. And the idea that, we have these needs and these wants and how do we work through those. And right now, it's really not about the technology, but we can leverage the technology to help each other and to bring us together. And there's been so much divisiveness. I hope that what we'll do is use the technology and use this time to think more carefully about how we work with each other, how we provide these resources for each other, and that we would make them available and work together. The resources are out there. We have this capability. We can bring people together with these networks. And again, it's really not about the networks. It's about the things that the networks bring to us that enrich our lives, that help us, that make our lives better. And I hope that's what we do. I hope we really come together and work with each other. This is going to take work and it's not going to be easy, but the elements are there. I hope we put them together well.
Well said, well said. I appreciate you both for joining us and for all you do for schools in your state. My guests today have been Jim Stewart and Rich Finlinson of the Utah Education Network. You can follow the network at UEN News on Twitter. You can review the full technology inventory report, which we referenced throughout this interview today, by heading to the UEN website at uen.org/digital-learning. Thanks for listening to Connected Nation with Jessica Denson. If you'd like our show and want to know more, check us out on connectednation.org/podcast, or please leave us a review on Spotify, Stitcher, and other common podcast platforms.